From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. Coming to you from New York's Finger Lakes region, I'm Jake Longwell. On today's program, we'll go way back in time to the mid-1930s for two broadcasts from the Columbia Broadcasting System. We'll begin with the debut episode of Then and Now. The series premiered on September 17, 1936, sponsored by the Sears Roebuck Company to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the founding of that great American institution. They did this by creating a series of radio dramas which profiled key people and events that helped shape America's destiny during those first 50 years. As I said, this is the debut episode in the series, featuring, among others, Robert Montgomery and Constance Bennett. From September 17th, 1936, it's Then and Now.
Ladies and gentlemen of America, tonight Sears Roebuck and Company celebrates its 50th anniversary by presenting the first of a new series of programs dedicated to you, the people of America.
Then and Now. A panorama of American destiny. A review of the past 50 years through which Sears Roebuck and Company has proudly grown up with America. Each week, Then and Now, we'll recreate for you in music, in drama, in song, the unforgettable events of the past half century. Each week, famous motion picture stars, composers, singers, the world's greatest talent will be brought into your home by Sears Roebuck and Company, the store where all America shops. Sears Roebuck and Company is proud to present on tonight's premiere broadcast,
Mr. Robert Montgomery, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer star, Miss Constance Bennett of 20th Century Fox, Mr. Fred Stone, beloved idol of Broadway, Miss Paula Stone, Hollywood's new starlet, Mr. Walter Hampton, dean of the American Theater, and tonight, for the first time on the air, a dramatization from the novel, which is thrilling hundreds of thousands of Americans, Gone with the Wind. Today, hundreds of newspapers told you about values, which are the flower of 50 years of merchandising. They spoke of four-star values, anniversary special, of values which mark a new era in the history of buying and selling. You will find them in Sears' 500 retail stores to mark the golden anniversary. Today, the famous Sears catalog shines a little more brightly in millions of American homes, where it has made the good things of life a little more bountiful, a little more accessible.
America saw two miracles that year. One was the Statue of Liberty, which France sent us for our 100th birthday. The other was the electric light, a young inventor by the name of Edison installed in the uplifted hand of the Goddess of Liberty. Let us look back into the life of this man of destiny to whom America and the world owe so much.
Mr. Walter Hampton plays the role of Thomas Alva Edison.
In his dim-lit laboratory stands the genius Thomas Edison. He's in his early 30s, permanently deaf as the result of a beating received when a small boy. His assistant, John Croisi, enters the laboratory as Edison busily tinkers with a curious-looking machine.
What is it you are working on now, Mr. Edison?
Just a minute, John. Now, let me see.
In boil over a little drum. Little tube, arch, but diaphragm,
a steel needle. Curious looking, isn't it? I think I got it, though, this time.
What in heaven's name is it, Mr. Edison?
I can't hear you. I'm not looking at you, John.
But,
If you want to know what it is, I'll tell you. It's something I've been working on in secret for a long time. It's a small prison.
Prison?
That's right. For locking up the human voice and preserving it for posterity.
I don't get you, sir.
Go on. Tell me this is impractical, too. This is a little device that's going to talk.
Ah, but such a thing is not practical, sir. A table can't talk.
There are lots of things you don't believe possible, John. You know, for instance, that in this chair here is enough energy to run a whole factory? Can you tell me what makes the little animal called man go round, eh? What's the secret of life? Who knows it, Croizy? You? Me? No one. That's why it's so fascinating. Do you realize what it will mean to the world if we can capture the human voice and keep it in a little box and have it talk whenever we want it to? Do you realize what that will mean? Don't think anything is impossible, Croizy. Now, just one more tightening of this little bolt. There, I'm ready, John. Watch me. I turn this little shaft here, and I talk. Mary had a little lamb. Its fleece was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, that lamb was sure to go. Now let's see whether all my effort has gone for naught. I turn the shaft backward to the starting point, adjust the tube, and once more turn the handle. Doesn't work. I guess you're right, Croizy. It's impractical. I guess you can't harness sound.
Oh, but, Mr. Edison, it does work. I heard it. Just what you said into it. The same words, the same things. It talked.
You are not lying to me, Croizy. Oh. I heard nothing.
Oh, no, Mr. Edison. I would never lie to you.
You really heard it? The same words?
Yes, sir, the same words.
How do I sound, John?
Oh, wonderful, sir. That machine is a success. The most amazing, the most wonderful thing that has ever been created, sir.
Ah, no, Croizy. More amazing and wonderful is the thing God created. Man.
Immortal Thomas Edison. The death man who made a machine talk, the genius who gave the world light, the wizard who performed incredible miracles, Thomas Edison, whose dreams have profoundly affected the destiny of the world.
The 90s.
The gay 90s, when bicycles were built for two. There were no movies in those days, but there were minstrel shows. It is late evening in the spring of 1896. Creaking along a dirt road in Louisiana are the red and gold wagons of the McIntyre and Heath Minstrels. Their destination is the little village of Old Town, just over the next rise. Atop the lead wagon sits Joe Hayden, a member of the company, Theodore Metz, conductor of the minstrel band, and Jim McIntyre.
Well, boys, we're coming into Old Town soon. I wish you boys had that song ready so we could introduce it at tomorrow night's opening.
Have it ready, all right, Mac.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about that. It's the title that's worrying us.
Well, we'll call it the song without a title, if necessary.
Well, I don't know.
That wouldn't be so good.
Much.
Yeah. Say, look down there in the valley. Do you see it?
What is it?
It's a fire. Part of the town is on fire.
Well, there'll be a hot time in Old Town tonight, all right.
My goodness, Mac. That's it. That is it.
What's it? Have you gone crazy?
The title, Matt. You have given us the title.
What title?
Hot Time in the Old Town Tonight.
When you hear them
the bells go ding-ling-ling. All join round, and sweetly you must sing. And when the birds stand through, and the chorus all join in, there'll be a hot time in the old town tonight.
Here it began. An obscure little town in Louisiana was the first to throb to the catchy and tuneful notes of Hot Time in the Old Town. For 2 years, the minstrels toured the country singing it, popularizing it wherever they went. But it needed the sudden shock of a tragic event to lift this song to its place in the pattern of America's destiny.
U.S. Naval Base reporting. The United States battleship Maine was blown up in Havana Harbor last night. The circumstances of the explosion are extremely mysterious, and the government has ordered an immediate...
The blue-shirted volunteers of 98 marched off to Cuba to the tune of Hot Time in the Old Town. They whistled it in their jungle camps. They sang it as they charged up San Juan Hill. They made it the song of the Spanish-American War. The eyes of America turned toward the St. Louis Exposition in celebration of the 100th anniversary of the Louisiana Purchase. Thousands upon thousands of people crammed their way into the fairgrounds that hot summer, eager to see how far America had come.
Ladies and gentlemen, before you is the famous Winton Automobile, holder of the world's long-distance record of over 1,000 miles.
Yes, me, tain't practical.
One moment, old-timer. Eh? This car drove all the way from New York just to come to the exposition.
Well, I bet the horse got tired pulling it.
In spite of the derision which greeted the automobile in 1904, it is indeed here to stay. And its coming developed an industry which was to be gigantic even among the colossal industrial combinations of those early 1900s. This was an age of leisurely living, of a cold bottle and a bird, picture hats and hobble skirts, when the haunting waltzes of the Castle House Orchestra gave way to the toe-tickling rhythms of ragtime. The tempo quickened. Life was gay, carefree. The world danced the turkey trot on the edge of... Within 3 short years, America came of age. The World War.
Come in.
Mrs. Alice Gresham?
Yes?
A telegram.
Oh, I don't have my glasses with me. Would you mind reading it, son?
Oh, sure. It's from the Secretary of War.
Yes.
Well, he says, regret to inform you that your son, Ben Gresham, was the first American soldier to be killed in the World War. I deeply sympathize with you. Great hour of freedom.
The Jazz Age. Post-war frenzy. Crossword puzzles. Rudolph Valentino. Bell-bottom trousers. King Tut. The Channel Swimmers. Speakeasies. Radio. And out of the restless moil of 20th century turbulence came the story of a beautiful friendship and a heartrending tragedy.
Daddy is yet, Bill. We're hoping for the best.
Listen, how about this show of his, Three Cheers? I read in the paper that they're going to call the whole thing off.
That's what was decided last night, Bill.
Well, you tell those birds in New York that I'm going to fly in from California to pinch hit until Fred gets well. Tell him, might not dance as funny, but I can sing as loud as Fred. And you tell Fred not to take it so hard, cause he'll be up and dancing again in no time.
Thanks, Bill. I will.
The nation thrilled as Will Rogers rushed to New York to fill in for his injured friend. America loved Will Rogers as it never loved anyone else. America was unprepared for that tragic summer day when Will Rogers flew off to a final landing.
This is Fred Stone speaking, friend. This is Will Rogers' spot, but nobody can pinch hit for Will Rogers. For if Will was here, he'd be on this program. The panorama of the America of the last 50 years just has to include Will. It was you, Will, who gave America an inspiration she never had known before. Your philosophy, your thinking, your little homespun sayings were bred in the soil of this nation. You were America, Will, and you were my friend. So I know you will understand about me taking your spot tonight. They didn't know of anyone else to get. And I wanted so much to do it for you, to return a beautiful favor. So if you'll let my daughter Paula and me go on for you, Bill.
In dear old New York, it's remarkable, Barry. The names on the lamppost is unnecessary. You merely have to see the girls to know what street you're on. Fifth Avenue beauties and dear old Broadway girls, at tailor-made shoppers, the Avenue A girls are strictly all right, but they're different quite in the different parts of town.
In old New York, the peach crop's always fine. They're gay and fair, and on the square, the men of Manhattan for mine. You cannot see in gay Paris, in London, or in Cork. The men you'll meet on any street in old New York.
Dance it, Paula.
Yankee Stadium in New York City, where 40,000 rabid fight fans gathered to witness the Jim Maloney-Jack Sharkey fight, the winner of which was to meet Jack Dempsey.
Sharkey just pounded Maloney's face with a series of hard rights and lefts, and he's backing Maloney into a corner, and he's belting away with 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, just like that. It looks as though, there goes the bell ending the round. Believe you me, folks, wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Joe Humphries has just stepped into the ring. This is very unusual for Joe. He's going to make an announcement in the midst of this fight.
Ladies and gentlemen, quiet, please. We just received a wireless report that a young man just took off in an airplane across the ocean alone. He's now somewhere over the open sea. And his name here is Charlie Lindbergh. Now I'm going to ask you, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't mind, And I don't think the two fighters will either. Let's all be quiet for 1 minute and sort of give the boy a helping prayer. And those of you who forgot how, just be quiet anyway.
Twenty hours later, the Lone Eagle dropped out of the French sky to a memorable landing in Paris and placed his name beside those of Columbus, Magellan, Parry, and Byrd. And today, what interests America? What people fascinate her? What books thrill her? What is America thinking?
A more sober, more reflective America. Read such historical novels as Gone with the Wind by Margaret Mitchell. A scene from which is dramatized for the first time on the air with Miss Constance Bennett as Scarlett O'Hara and Mr. Robert Montgomery as Rhett Butler.
Gone with the Wind, the story of Scarlett O'Hara, daughter of a South whose traditions have been shattered by the Civil War. Scarlett O'Hara, coquette, vixen, ready to recruit every feminine wile to achieve her personal pleasures and stability, who married a man she did not love, though fascinated by Rhett Butler, charming scoundrel and blockade runner. Then her husband is killed. On the evening of his burial, Scarlett sits alone in her room, alone with herself, rationalizing as her brain insists on tormenting her.
Once it's quiet in the house. Not even any quarreling with Peter or Mammy or Cookie. Nothing. And all because Frank is lying in his grave and I killed him. No, I mustn't say that. But he did go out in the night for me. He was caught in that raid and shot. God will punish me for that. God will punish me for marrying Frank when he really loved Sue Ellen. I made him very unhappy and abort like a gentleman. But I really didn't make him entirely unhappy. I gave him our child, Ella. Oh, Frank, if you're only alive now, I could make up for it all. If I could only find someone who would let me put my head on his shoulder and cry. I wouldn't see Frank's face. That hurt, look. I wouldn't see it anymore.
Aunt Biddy, I want to talk with Scarlett.
But the child is lying down now, Captain Butler. He's right prostrated.
She'll see me. You tell her I'm going away tomorrow. Tell her it's terribly important.
Red, I'll be down directly. Must put the mood on. No, just a bit of nod. Aunt Petey would be shocked. I'm coming down, Red.
Forgive me for disturbing you, Scarlett. I'm sorry I couldn't be at Frank's funeral.
I understand.
Will you pardon us, Aunt Petey?
Oh, certainly. I'll close the door if I go
out. Why did you come, Red?
I wanted to find out.
Find out what?
What the matter with you is.
You're a real callous person, Red. You're like me.
Come on, honey, what is it? Isn't it more than just old Frank dying?
Oh, Red, I'm so afraid. I'm afraid I'll die and go to hell.
You're pretty healthy, and maybe there isn't any hell.
But there is, Rick. You know there is.
I know there is, but it's right here on Earth.
Well, I oughtn't to have married Frank. It was wrong. He was Sue Ellen's beau, and he loved her, not me. But I lied to him. I told him she was going to marry someone else. How could I have done it, Rick?
Well, that's how you got Frank. I always wondered.
I made him do all sorts of things he didn't want to do. I was so mean to him. But I'm not really mean. My mother always said that I...
Your mother? I've often wondered what your mother was like.
Oh, Red. For the first time, I'm glad she's dead so she can't see me. She didn't raise me to be mean, Red. She'd rather I'd have your daughter than do this. And I so wanted to be like her in every way. And I'm not like her a bit. Not a bit. Mother died right after the Yankees went through. Red, you can't imagine. I get all cold when I think of it. I can see how everything is burned and still, and there's nothing to eat, you know. Oh, Rhett, in my dreams, I'm hungry again.
Go on.
I'm hungry, and my mind keeps saying, if I ever get out of this, I'll never, never be hungry again. And then the dream goes off into a gray mist, and I'm running so hard, my heart's about to burst, and something is chasing me, and I can't breathe, but I keep thinking, if I can just get there, I'll be safe, but I don't know where I'm trying to get to.
Honey, let's get to the bottom of this. You say if you had it to do over again, you'd do it differently. But would you? Think now, would you?
Oh, I don't know.
all so mixed up.
Why don't you tell me the truth? Hasn't your conscience bothered you before this?
I didn't think much about conscience before. I guess I just reckoned God would understand.
But you don't credit God with understanding why you married Frank.
Red, how can you talk about God so when you don't even believe there is
you
one?
You believe in a God of wrath, and that's what's important at the moment. I'm surprised at you, Scarlet, for sprouting a conscience this late in life. Opportunists like you shouldn't have them.
What's an opportunist?
Person who takes advantage of opportunities.
That law?
It's always been held in bad taste by those who had the same opportunities and didn't take them. Now, I'll tell you why I came here this evening.
Why?
I'm going away.
Where?
To England, and I've got news.
What news?
My news is this. I still want you more than any woman I've ever seen. And now that Frank is gone, I thought you'd be interested to know it.
Red Butler, you're the most ill-bred man in the world coming here at a time like this with Frank hardly cold in his grave. If you had any decency...
I'm afraid you missed my point.
I don't miss anything. Let go of me and get out of here.
Listen, I'm asking you to marry me. Would you be convinced if I knelt down?
Oh.
I've always intended having you, Scarlet, since the first day I saw you at 12 Oaks, when you threw a vase and swore just to prove to me you weren't a lady.
You look so calm, just as if you were discussing the weather.
I bear my soul when you're suspicious. I'm going away for a long time, and if I wait till I return, I'm afraid you have married someone else with money. So I thought, why not me and my money? Really, Scarlet, I can't go on all my life waiting to catch you between husbands.
I don't think I'll ever marry again.
Oh, yes, you will. You were born to be married.
But, Red, I don't love you.
That's no drawback. Your love never loved Frank. Did you ever think of marrying just for the fun of it?
Don't talk like a fool. There's no fun being married.
Oh, I don't know. Why not try marrying a fine young man who has a bad reputation and a way with women?
You're coarse and conceited, and this conversation has gone quite far now.
Come, Scarlet, say you'll marry me, or I'll stay around here and play a guitar under your window every night and sing at the top of my voice so you'll marry me to save your reputation.
But I don't want to marry anybody.
Scarlet O'Hara, you're a fool.
Oh, don't, Beth.
Scarlet.
Please.
Scarlet.
Let me go.
You're in my arms now. Your clinging to me is the only solid thing in a dizzy, swaying world. You've never felt like this before in your whole life.
Rick,
you've had this coming to you for years. None of the fools you've known have kissed you like this, have they? Gentlemen all, but what do they know about women? What do they know about you? I know you. Say yes, Scarlet. Say yes.
Yes.
You mean it? You don't want to take it back? Just why did you say yes? Look at me. Is it my money?
My Rick. What a question.
Look up and don't try to sweet-talk me.
You are in love with me, are you? Why should I be in love with you?
No. No, my dear. I'm not in love with you. No more than you are with me. And if I were, you'd be the last person I'd ever tell. God help the man who ever really loves you. You'd break his heart, my darling.
Mm.
All right. Let me know if you change your mind.
Oh. Well, aren't you going to kiss me goodbye?
Don't you think you've had enough kissing for one evening? To think of a modest, well-brought-up young woman. Well, I told you it would be fun, didn't I?
Oh, you're just impossible. And I don't care if you never come back.
But I will come back. I will. And you'll wait until I do.
Red.
Years ago, a man bought a watch. It was a good watch, better than he ever expected to own, and at a lower price than he ever expected to pay. The man who bought the watch was Louis Lindemann of North Redwood, Minnesota. And the man he bought it from was Richard W. Sears, founder of Sears Roebuck and Company. Wherever you are, Louis Lindemann, will you please stand up? On Sears, Roebuck & Company's Golden Jubilee, 50,000 Sears employees join in nationwide tribute to you, the first Sears customer. You and Sears, Roebuck & Company know, Mr. Lindemann, how far this country has really come. Mr. Lindemann, what time is it? Is it nightfall or just the dawn? Tick, tick, tick. On
the forward march of America, marching into a new day, grander, more beautiful than we have ever known before. Marching, marching to the music of the spheres and the tick of a clock. What?
Thank you, Mr. Hampton.
Gone with the Wind, the forthcoming Selznick International production, was presented on tonight's broadcast by special permission of the Macmillan Company and Selznick International Pictures, the copyright owners. Robert Montgomery appeared by permission of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Constance Bennett with permission of 20th Century Fox. The song's Night in Manhattan is from the big broadcast of Paramount Picture. Varsity Greg from the production Good News.
Next Thursday at this same time, Sears invites you to go back through the years again and to meet their guest stars, Admiral Richard E. Byrd, Helen Gleason of the Metropolitan Opera, and the Abbey children, Patience, Richard, and John, authors of the best-selling Around the World in 11 Years.
The very first episode of Then and Now, from September 17th, 1936, on CBS. One of the things that really made this episode stand out in radio history is the scene where Robert Montgomery and Constance Bennett acted out a scene from Gone with the Wind. To my knowledge, this was the first and quite possibly the only time that a scene from that grand motion picture was ever performed on radio. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch, our email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And please visit our blog and website for much more info about the show and also streaming audio of this and previous episodes. qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. If you want the playlist or audio for this program, look for Upstate Radio Theater program number 1813. We'll conclude the hour with another mid-1930s CBS broadcast, an episode of The Good Gulf program, sponsored by the Good Gulf Refining Company, and starring Will Rogers. This broadcast is from April 21st, 1935.
Ladies and gentlemen, spring is back, and with it, Will Rogers and his alarm clock, all the way from Hollywood, California, brought to you by the makers of that good Gulf gasoline. With Will Rogers tonight are our Gulf headliners, Frank Tours Orchestra, and Miss Helen Gleason of the Metropolitan Opera Company. But just a minute before we begin tonight's show. As I said, spring is back, and it's time for every motorist to think about that worn winter oil in his crankcase. You know, winter oil takes punishment, and when it gets full of dust, sand, carbon, it means that your motor is going to take punishment, too. Well, now, here's an easy way to find out the truth. Drive into your nearest Gulf gasoline station. Ask the dealer to give you the famous Gulf screen oil test. He'll take one drop out of your crankcase, put it on the filter paper of the tester drop, and you can see for yourself whether the oil needs changing. You do the looking, and you make the decision, new oil or old oil. But don't take any chances. Ask your Gulf dealer for one of those interesting cards that show actual specimens of the harsh abrasives that may be in your crankcase right now. Then ask about the small cost of having the crankcase flushed with crankcase cleaning oil. It takes only a few minutes. It will thoroughly cleanse your crankcase, and you'll avoid putting fresh, clean oil in a dirty crankcase. And while you're there, don't forget that you can give your car added pep and running smoothness by filling your tank with that good Gulf gasoline. 40,000 service stations are ready to serve you. Well, now, Will Rogers is waiting for us in California, and here's Frank Tours Orchestra with a tune that lifts the curtain. All right, Frank. Thank you. orchestra has just played Zing Went the Strings of My Heart from Thumbs Up. And here, ladies and gentlemen, is the lovely Miss Helen Gleason, whose first song is You Are Free from Apple Blossom. Los Angeles, California, for Will Rogers and his famous alarm clock.
Hi. Hi. Hi, Cover. There you are, huh? Well, we're right back out in California, the old orange juice belt. The old sunshine state. Of course, it didn't show up today. We ain't had any sunshine today. It rained instead. But it's fine. I've been riding today. Been riding way off around up in the hills, back to the Santa Monica Mountains, and riding up in there. And it's running on the kind of peculiar thing. I traveling around up on the trails back in the hills there. I think it's about four deer. But about five Republicans showed up. Now that's an omen that don't look so good. There's no Republicans. Now, in the old days, I'd ride through there a few months ago. I could rode through those hills and I wouldn't see them at all. I'd see more deer. But these Republicans are coming out of the brush now. And you'd be surprised at the amount of them that's showing up, you know. In the old days, they wouldn't cuss Roosevelt, they wouldn't cuss directly at him. They would kind of, like billiards, they would bank off of Tugwell, Samoli, they would shoot at poor little Tugwell, and then go off to Volley, then off of the bank, then down to Roosevelt, you know, maybe three cushioning, you know what I mean? Now, oh boy, they got all the nerve in the world, they're going direct now, you know what I mean? They're just shooting direct at him without anything.
Funny enough, sir. Well, you know, I figured out it's peculiar. It's a peculiar state of affairs that exists. And everybody that is doing better than they were 3 or 4 years ago or making more money has got in for the present. But they don't seem to realize they're doing better on the money that he's spending. You see what I mean? Doing better on his money. Now, we all know that the government is spending all this money, and it's not a good state of affairs to exist. The country's in bad shape when there ain't nobody spending any money but the government. But now, what you gonna do about it? Of course, one remedy would be for the people that have money to, for them to start spending it instead of the government. But that seems just about as unpopular as a Roosevelt idea. In fact, it's worse. Well, if we sit out and pass the bill tomorrow and said the government can't keep on spending this money. But for a government to exist, somebody has got to spend money. So from this day and date, the government's going to stop spending money and make it compulsory that the people do the spending. Boy, what a howl they'd go up from that, you know. They couldn't make that law stick. People would say, no, we saved it, and we have worked and we've made it, and we got the right to do as we please with it. So that little idea is out. People ain't going to spend. That's out. So what other idea we got? We got to keep on working with ideas, yeah? Well, if the government is throwing this money away, the only thing I see for the ones that are throwing... the ones that they are throwing it to, outside of those that absolutely need of it, you know. Well, the only thing I see is have them refuse it. You know what I mean? If you don't believe in what Roosevelt is doing with this money, why refuse it? It becomes just say, no, it's government money and it's tainted and I don't believe in the government. And I don't believe in the government spending all this money and hence I don't take any part of it. And you say, no, you have paid this out. Now, for instance, take me, for instance. I'd say, no, the government paid this out for the people to eat. And here they are coming to see my pictures with it. I don't agree with that at all, you know. Now, you can imagine me saying that, you know what I mean. But if I was that, it would be the way to look at it, you know. I ought to refuse to accept the money. It's government money. I don't believe in the government spending this money. So I'm not going to take it. Here's a man that maybe wants to pay his loan at the bank. Well, maybe the RFC loaned him the money. You know, they're doing that a lot. And they get the money from the government and they go to pay the bank. And the bank says, I don't believe in the bank, naturally, all the banks says, I don't believe in the government spending all this money. But when the man comes to pay his loan with government money, they don't say, no, I can't take it. I'll just carry you myself. Now, of course, it's going to cost the taxpayers a lot of money to loan this fella the money to pay off his loan to the bank. You know, it's going to do that. But nevertheless, they kick on that, but they don't refuse to take it. They ought to say, well, no, I ain't going to take it. I made the loan, and it was me that made it, and I should be the one to stand by. But you haven't heard that.
I haven't done it. Anything.
Well, anyhow, there's not a person in America that received a dollar, no matter where it come from, that received a single dollar, and no matter where it come from, that it hasn't grabbed it, you know, without asking any questions about it or not. It might have been paid out for relief for a starving child, but if it reached us, we was the starving child. And make any difference. So the only thing I see for the fella that don't believe in all this spending is to not participate in receiving any of it. I can't very well legitimately criticize a fella for spending money if I receive some of it without any criticism in the receipt of it, you know. I mean, if I don't believe it so, I'll at least make a little attempt to say that it ain't right when I grab off some of it. So this $5 billion that they're starting in to spend, we all know that that's too much money. It's too much money to take out and throw away or give away or whatever to do with it. We know that. We all know that. But until we refuse to take some of it and it comes our way, we ain't got much right to holler. Now, that brings us down to taxes. You know what I mean? That brings us down to taxes. And, boy, when you bring us down to taxes, you're going to hear a howl like a pet coon. You know, brings us down that. This money coming from all the government is thrown away. Well, it just sort of looks like it might come. Where is it coming from? Everybody says, where's the money coming from? We're spending. Well, I don't know, but just offhand, I'd say it's coming from those that have got it. No. There you go. Now, I don't know. That may be just a rough idea of mine. I don't know. But I kind of believe that's where it's coming from. There's one good thing about the American form of government. The fella that's got nothing, he don't pay nothing, you know. And, two, lots of times, the fella, he has got something, but, and he ain't got any money to pay, you know, to pay. He's got some, but he ain't got any nothing to pay with, pay his taxes with. But he can at least let him have the property back and get an even break, anyhow, you know. But the big yell comes nowadays from the taxpayers, the big taxpayers. I guess when, I bet you when the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock and they had the whole of the American continent, you know, to themselves, you know, just them and them Pilgrims there, they landed up there. And all they had to do for, to get an extra 160 acres was shoot another Indian, you know. Well, I bet you anything, they kicked on the price of ammunition, you know. I bet they said, what's this country coming to? You know what I mean? Right, like we're doing now. You know, what's this coming, your country coming to? You know, this country coming to that we have to spend a nickel for powder. Of course, they got the lead back after they dissected the Indian. But, no matter, I don't know, ain't it funny? No matter what we pay, I don't care whether we pay high taxes, low taxes, medium taxes, or no tax, anything, the yell is always the same. 100%, you know what I mean? They just yell 100%. Of course, we know our government is costing us more than it's worth, but do you know of any other cheaper government that's running around now? I mean, do you? I mean, if you do, I mean, they'll sell you a ticket there anytime. Now, you can try Russia. I was over there. Yeah, you can try Russia. There's no income tax in Russia, but there's no income. Now, Hitler ain't got no sales tax, you know what I mean, but he ain't selling anything. Well, that's fine. Mussolini, you don't have to pay a poll tax to vote in Italy, you know, but nobody votes, so. Now the whole question is, how can we make such a holler on what the government wants to collect back from us, you know? The thing is, it looks like we can't have everything like we want to, you know? But the whole question is the government, how much of this money which we are asked to pay back in taxes have they paid us? You know what I mean? You know, we must have got quite a little divvy of it, some way or another, indirectly. Admitting, as everybody does, that the government is the only one spending money, and if they're the only one spending anything, and anything we're getting must come from them. It looks like an endless chain to me, only when it reaches our length, well, we don't want to cut any back into the kitty. I don't know what it's all about. This is just a kill time up here. It'll something else sometime. I don't know any more about this thing than an economist does, and God knows he don't know anything. Everything nowadays is just to make talk. Now, but next week, I'm going to present to you my scheme, you know? You see, every man nowadays has got a scheme to bring us out of the wilderness, you know? Well, not so much to bring us out of the wilderness as to bring himself out, I mean, you know? And I've been studying the Townsend plan and the Long plan and the Coughlin plan and the Roosevelt plan. Hoover, he broke out with a plan here the other day. And I'm working. Maybe I'll do it next week. I don't know. I get around to it. I'm working on what's called the Rogers plan. Rogers. Yes, sir, the Rogers. Yes, sir, the Rogers plan. Just about 3 more Welsh rabbits every night, and I'll be ready for the Rogers plan. I'm going to have it in shape, you know.
Anyhow, don't do anything. Now, don't sign up with any of these other plans. Don't you boys sign up, because I believe I've got a better offer for you than any of them. And don't be too critical of the present plan, you know, of the Roosevelt plan. It's working for, for as long as we're all living on the loot, why, we can't holler about it, see? But remember now, about next week, I'm going to give you the Rogers plan. I'm just working on a few planks of it there now, and I ain't got it quite in shape. But I don't care what they offer you, I'll do better. You know what I mean? I'll do better. Oh, say, wait, I got to tell you about the movie. It started out. This ain't what it started out. Tell you about the movie. You know, we are they're figuring on watching the legislature, and if we put certain facts on, they say we're going to leave. One gentleman, Mr. Sam Golden, this morning says we're going to England. There you go. I tell you, I bet you we don't go nowhere. I bet you that we don't go east of Vermont Avenue. The movies is we're in an industry that kind of depends on the goodwill of the people, and they overlook the biggest thing in all this moving. You can't get much goodwill by dodging taxes, you know. Because I don't care where you go, they'll bring you in there, you know, and say,
you the boys don't pay anything, you know.
But those guys that says you don't pay nothing, they ain't there next year, you know what I mean. They washed up and gone home somewhere, you know. They ain't gonna go. But I don't know where we're gonna go. If we go to New Jersey, I can see, here's a scene from New Jersey. You know, you folks on the radio maybe can't see this like my audience here. Here's Miss Greer, here's an actress playing a scene. Oh, in front of the camera in New Jersey. I love you. Oh. Damn those mosquitoes. I love you. Now say we go down south. They're talking a good deal about us going down in North and South Carolina somewhere. Well, there's wonderful states. I've been down there a lot in the great old states and all. But naturally, the influence of the people would have an effect on you. Now if we go down in North and South Carolina, I can just see Rita Garbo coming before the screen. You know what I mean? After mixing with all the North and South Carolinians. And I love that dialect and all. And Rita Garbo says, yeah, I sure do love you, Garbo. Goodbye.
Next Sunday night, look for the Rogers. Good night. Thank you, Will, and we'll be waiting for you same time next Sunday. Now, Frank Tours and the orchestra are ready to bring us one of the best of the recent tunes. Take a number from 1 to 10. Asking in the Gulf Funny Weekly. I know you'll enjoy its clever comics and say your kiddies will jump for joy when you bring it home.
All you need to do is to drive into the nearest Gulf service station tonight or tomorrow and ask for your copy of this great little paper. But don't delay, because they may be all gone. Notice the back page. There's some live news there about Gulf's handy household aids for spring cleaning. Gulf Spray Insect Killer, Gulf Electric Motor Oil, Gulf Gleam Liquid Gloss for furniture, Gulf Auto Cleaner, and Gulf Auto Wax. Get them from the Gulf Service Station or your favorite retail store and let them go to work for you.
From April 21st, 1935 on CBS, The Good Gulf program starring Will Rogers, that episode also featuring opera singer Helen Gleason. And with that, we come to the end of this hour of the program. My name is Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. Please join me again soon for another hour of sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.